Good evening. Welcome to the Jamie Glazov Show, the new feature of frontpagemag.com. David Horowitz's website that deals with the war at home and abroad. We have two very special guests with us this evening, two freedom fighters on the front lines in the terror war. We have Robert Spencer, a leading scholar of Islam, director of Jihad Watch, the author of many books, including The Truth About Muhammad. And we also have the irrepressible Pamela Geller, founder, editor, and publisher of AtlasShrugs.com. She is the executive director of Stop Islamization of America, as well as the Freedom Defense Initiative. She is the author of the new book, Stop the Islamization of America, A Practical Guide to the Resistance. Now, Robert Spencer and Pamela Geller are a team. They fight on the front lines, and they also write together. They're the co-authors of a great book, The Post-American Presidency, The Obama Administration's War on America. Pamela and Robert, it is a privilege to have you here.
Irrepressible?
Is that good or bad? I can retract that.
I mean, if
I
Robert and
have
I are team,
repressed?
Yeah, is he press and I'm irrepressible? Of all the words ever to describe me, I have to tell you, that one's new. You've been watching the Carol Burnett Show, I think.
Okay, and we want to stress to our guests that this is a call-in show, 347-857-1380. You can call in and ask all the questions you've ever wanted to Pamela Geller and Robert Spencer.
Well, don't we have to say something to get the vote of
confidence? Absolutely. So let's start with this then. I thought the best thing to do was to start... Robert and Pamela, as you know,
you are the best radio host I have ever known.
In the history of blog talk radio.
Thank you very much.
Have they come out yet with a little bit of a ding-dong? I mean, it's around a long time now, this blog talk radio. I mean, you notice it's still the Brit? You know, it's still the Brit when you call in?
Yes.
I mean, the guy is from Queens. Who's Alan Levy kidding? Okay.
Okay, Pamela and Robert. Thank you. Our stand-up comedian talents will all come out as the show goes along.
Yes,
but I want to start with something serious.
He wants to go back to Iran.
The attack on the French magazine, Charlie Hebdo. And what I wanted to start with was not just the persecution of that newspaper. I would like each of you to begin the program by telling me a little bit about the persecution of you two and what is happening lately, your efforts to speak, the way you're being slandered, the way you're being prevented from speaking. Pamela, could you begin first with what's been happening with you lately?
Look, the French magazine is just a couple of blocks ahead of us. That's all. The fact that we're being shut down, that speech under the blasphemy laws, under Sharia, the restriction of free speech, we're seeing it in the norming of the Sharia, the norming of the Sharia in the American culture. I go to speak in Sugar Land, Texas. The Hyatt Place cancels me because a couple of people called up and threatened. That's all it took. And despite the fact that thousands wrote, emailed, and sold stock, they were sort of unmoved, although in all fairness, they canceled less than 24 hours before. So the knee-jerk reaction, the wonderful knee-jerk reaction by readers and freedom lovers across the country, really wasn't timely. But certainly in the case of the conference that Robert and I were chairing, which was canceled in Nashville, Tennessee, the Freedom Conference, the Hutton Hotel certainly had ample time to revisit their knee-jerk jerk-off there, the canceling of the conference, which was outrageous because a couple of, I don't know if it was Islamic supremacists, we don't know who threatened the hotel, but one or two people threatened, but we know they received hundreds, if not thousands, of letters of protest, and they were unmoved, which tells us one thing, that these establishments are more afraid of them than they are of us, and that has to change.
Robert?
What was that Lawrence Welk in the background thing?
I think that was somebody's cell phone. Robert, your perspective
Wonderful.
On how this conference was blocked and what you think has to start being done about things like this by concerned citizens.
Well, Pamela's right. We have to fight back. We have to make them more afraid of the public opinion that is going to rain down upon them than they are afraid of these leftists and Islamic supremacists who are enemies of freedom of speech. The Hutton Hotel in Nashville, they made it clear where they stood. When somebody called in, I don't even remember who it was, but somebody called in and talked to the representative of Amerimar Enterprises that owns the hotel, and Steve Eckley. And Eckley actually said to him, "You're so right-wing, I'm not going to discuss this with you anymore." And so it was clear that he didn't cancel because he was afraid of security issues. I mean, that's not what you do. If you're afraid of security issues, then you get police there. Big deal. You know, I've spoken in places, and Pamela has too, and we've spoken together at places where there were threats, where Muslims were saying they were going to come and kill us, they were going to come and do something. And they did, nobody batted an eye. They just had security there, and we took care of the problem. We were not going to be cowed. We were not going to submit to violent intimidation. But this guy, when he said that, he made it clear that what he was really about was that he didn't approve of what we were saying, and so he was not going to allow us to say it. Now, this is absolutely, obviously, contrary to American principles, to the idea of the freedom of speech, and to the idea of equality of access to public places, and the idea that because people's political opinions are not acceptable, that they can be driven out of the public square. It not only is a totalitarian impulse, but it plays right into the hands of the larger Islamic supremacist agenda out of the Organization of Islamic Cooperation to shut down freedom of speech, to shut down honest discussion about Islam and jihad. And the agenda behind that, of course, is so that that jihad can proceed unimpeded.
Uh-huh. Thank you, Robert. Let me backtrack for a minute. I want to get back to both you and Pamela on what led you to this fight, because as we see now, your lives are actually on the line, and there's so many people that are scared that are actually backing out of, you know, these events that are being hosted, etc. Pamela, let me turn back to you. Can you give us a little bit briefly your intellectual journey on what motivated you and inspired you to take up this cause?
Well, I just want to say one thing about being afraid. It's not just us. Everybody should be afraid to do nothing. That's scarier than taking up the fight. To your question on what led me to where I am today, so to speak, clearly it was 9/11. Previous to 9/11, I was a New York City career girl. I loved my life. I was apolitical. I always had the fashion channel on. You know, I used to dance at Bruno's. I really was a driven, ambitious girl, and I assumed my freedom. I never for one second ever thought that America was not going to be forever. It never even entered my the wildest imagination. And so on 9/11, when I was standing on that dock watching those buildings burn, I not only was Manhattan shattered, but I was shattered. My whole premise was shattered. My whole the whole nature of my thinking and everything I believed, you know, sort of crumbled. I just assumed my freedom, and I could no longer assume it. I felt guilty. I didn't know who had attacked this country, and when I found out who attacked the country, I felt guilty that I didn't know or understand who had attacked the country and why they had attacked the country.
Pamela, had you always been a conservative with these views that you have today?
No, I wouldn't call myself a conservative. I would call myself an individualist.
Uh-huh, okay.
You know, I was a post-historical, meaning I was naive enough to think that the good guys won World War II, evil was defeated, and the good cop was on the beat, and there'd be skirmishes and so on and so forth, but that good had won. And we were sort of in a post-historical age after the most egregious and monstrous of wars, World War II. And clearly the lesson of anti-Semitism, you know, was I had no idea it was just a respite. I had no idea it was just a burp, this sort of moratorium for the for 30 or 40 years. And then we're seeing it unleashed again, particularly under an anti-Semitic president. That's how I got into the fight. I then, of course, spent the years, you know, trying to find out. And that led me to, you know, Robert Spencer and Bacheor and Ibn Warraq and, you know, the hit parade. And
the what parade? I'm sorry.
The hit parade, no pun intended.
Yeah, they want to hit us all.
Oh, okay. All right.
Anyway, so I'm not doing that. I am not singing until I open that club, okay? Anyway, so that's what led me here. And, of course, the media has abdicated its role, you know, as public servant in the information dissemination and news gathering and so forth. They've completely, you know, subjugated themselves to the blasphemy laws. And so I was driven online, and I would comment on blogs, and someone sent me the template for a blog and said, stop blogging. And I'm like, I don't know anything about blogging. They're like, just shut up and write. And that's how it started. That's how Atlas Shrugged started, and I named it Atlas Shrugged because Atlas Shrugged was my favorite book. And on the net, you only have about maybe 8 to 10 seconds, like a rodeo ride, to capture the reader's imagination. And so while most people back in 2005 had not read Atlas Shrugged, even if you hadn't read it, just the visual metaphor alone, Atlas mm-hmm. shrugging, what would happen if Atlas shrugged? Well, the world would fall down, and I saw that as what was happening. And so I thought it would be great. If you knew what Atlas Shrugged was, you'd be like, yeah, I'm down with that. Let's do it. And if you didn't, you'd be like, you'd scratch your head and think, that's an interesting idea. So that's my answer to your question.
And Pamela, you're one of the few people fighting for the victims of honor killing. You're bringing to the forefront the victims that have been killed. And, I mean, you're the humanitarian in our modern world today by standing up for these victims and for women and all victims of Islamic Jihad and gender apartheid, etc. But simultaneously, you are slandered, you are called names, efforts to muzzle you. What I want to ask is, have there been periods where it became so difficult and disheartening that, you know, how do you keep going? Let's put it that way. Were there times when you felt that it was a lost cause because of how suffocating the culture is?
Well, I know I'm right, and that gives me a great deal of succor. I know that I'm right. And so I don't question what I'm doing. Of course the state of the world and this slippery slope that we're descending down is deeply troubling and deeply disturbing. But let me say this, if there's one free man anywhere, then there's hope. And so that's how I see my role. I do see it as the moral inversion of good and evil. You know, somewhere in the Bible they said, woe to those who call good evil and evil good. Well, I think we got a lot of woe coming down the pike. But that's what we're seeing. It's interesting. You know, today I was contacted by Anderson Cooper's show. They were doing a whole special, a whole hour tomorrow, and on the All-American Muslim show that's on the Learning Channel, TLC. And they wanted me on, and I had to give them my talking points, and we were going back and forth all day. This started, I guess, at 8, 9 o'clock this morning, and I was confirmed to be on. And then, of course, at 5 o'clock, I got the cancellation call, and I will tell you why they canceled me. Because, frankly, I really had no problem with the show. And I told them that. I said, I wouldn't care if you did a show on Hindus. How about a show on Jewish people and maybe a little Zoroastrian action wouldn't be bad? I said, my problem with that show is the premise that because of Islamophobia, we have to do a reality show about Muslims to show that, you know, Muslims are just like us. And, you know, whoever said that there weren't splendid Muslims, whoever said that there weren't good Muslims, our issue, and this is how, of course, they frame us as anti-Muslim and anti-Islam. And no matter how many times I say, on how many shows and how many articles, I am not anti-Muslim, I am not anti-Islam, I'm counter-jihad, it doesn't matter because that doesn't ring with their narrative.
Yeah, and you know, Pamela, I would think that you and people like us are pro-Muslim because we're actually trying to help the victims of Islamic apartheid, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, and they said, well, you know, there are women there that wear the hijab, you know, what do you think about that? And I said, I think that's lovely. And if there are women there that have purple hair and 40 earrings in their nose, I think that's lovely too. My concern is with the women that, like Aksa Parvez, that are forced to wear the hijab, and when they take it off, the father and the brother murders them, or even Rizka Barry, if you recall, in the car when she would pull and tug on her hijab, her father would sock her.
Yeah.
You know, but no, they don't want it. I said, you know, where are those Muslims represented in this show? Why aren't those Muslims represented in this show? So at the end of the day, they canceled me because what they really wanted was somebody on who would say, yeah, I hate Muslims and this show is terrible. Because that's what they wanted. And they were afraid, in my opinion, to have somebody on that might change some minds.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Pamela. Robert, I apologize that you've been silent for a very long period so far. Robert, let's turn to you for a minute. There's been a couple rumors that I've heard that back in the day you were seen walking around with some Marxist-Leninist material when you were younger.
Yes.
Is it
well,
true
you know,
that it – I mean, I apologize if I labeled Pamela conservative earlier. I take that back. But somewhere that all of us are somewhere anti-left now. And, Robert, you became anti-left, but am I correct that in your earlier days you were a little bit on the other side?
Oh, yeah, not a little bit. I was totally into it. And you know what they say, if you are not a leftist when you're young, you have no heart, and if you're not a conservative when you're older, you have no mind. And so, you know, I was a leftist. I got better.
And aww. Now, and you, and there's compassion coming from Pamela. Now, but Robert, you were a leftist, but am I correct that your passage into the anti-jihad battle was actually through an interest in Islam? Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, well, you know, I was just interested in Islam from a very early age because my family is from the Islamic world. And my grandparents would tell me stories about life in the Ottoman Empire, the last great Islamic empire, and they were all completely positive about it. But then I would say, well, why did you leave? Well, we were exiled. And they were exiled because they didn't want to convert to Islam. And this was around the end of World War I. And I was puzzled by that, and so I was kind of fascinated by that whole part of the world and by Islam itself and started to read into it just as a matter of interest. And then that led in the 90s to my consulting on a private basis with some individuals and some groups about Islamic issues. And then after 9/11, one of them that I was consulting for, I was talking to one of the people that I was dealing with, and I was telling him, you know, all this coverage about 9/11 is completely wrong. They're not getting why it happened. They don't understand about Islam. They don't. They're completely misdiagnosing this problem. And he said, well, then you should write about it. You write a book. And I thought, well, why should I write a book when, you know, I'm nobody. Nobody's going to read the book. And he said, don't worry about that. Just write it, and I will get it out there. And he did. And it did very well. My first book, Islam Unveiled, got to number 10 on the bestseller list, and I was completely shocked by that. And one thing led to another, and this is all I do now. But it, in a certain sense, it parallels Pamela's journey in that 9/11 was the impetus. It's an amazing thing that there are so many Americans who awoke on that day. And, of course, I was aware of the problem before that, but I wasn't doing this work publicly before that. And that made me come out and do this publicly. But the thing is that those Americans, those among us who realized, well, we were attacked on 9/11. It was the largest attack on American soil in American history. And yet the people who have reacted to that by wanting to identify the threat and fight the threat where it is are demonized and vilified by groups that profess to oppose the attack. That is, by Muslim groups like the Hamas-linked Council on American Islamic Relations and others. They act as if anybody who reacts to 9/11, anybody who thinks 9/11 calls for a response and defense of freedom, is somehow wrong, bigoted, and hateful. Everybody should just take it in stride and act like nothing happened. And, of course, this reveals their real agenda, which is simply to continue to allow Islamic supremacism to advance in the United States, not necessarily by more jihad attacks. What are you eating Cracker Jacks there or something?
My printer is busted.
Oh, it's true.
Pamela, what are you doing? Are you fixing something during this important show?
Listen, we have to multitask in our world, okay? We have no staff.
All right.
That's
as
right.
Well as it helps, whatever you're fixing, as long as it helps your anti-jihadi activity.
All those millions that they say we have.
Let me remind, we have so many people signed in listening to the radio show. I think that they're afraid to call or maybe a little bit of shy because they don't want to interrupt the tremendous wisdom that is being bestowed here today. But let me remind the callers that Robert and Pamela do not bite. They will be very friendly and answer your questions.
Jamie, can I just correct you on one quick thing? It's not that I wasn't a conservative. There are things I just want to just correct that. I was an individualist. Now, this is individualism versus collectivism. And so there are elements in the conservative movement that I don't agree with. I am pro-choice, for example. Is that a conservative platform?
Well, you might be a libertarian as opposed to...
No. I'm not a libertarian. I'm giving you the word. Why are you searching for another word? I'm telling you what the word is.
Libertarian is Ron Paul. Ron Paul has no clue about jihad. Ron Paul thinks if we leave them alone, they'll leave us alone. He doesn't have any idea that they might hate us
for reasons of
their own.
If it was between Obama and Ron Paul, I'd be struggling because, Obama's just, he's dishonest, but he knows to be dishonest.
Right.
Except when he's caught off on a hot mic. Ron Paul is, pro nuclear weapons for Iran.
I meant more also on social issues, perhaps.
So I'm an individual rights. Individualism versus collectivism. To me, it's freedom versus slavery. In defense of the individual, I speak for the smallest minority in the world, and that is the individual. And that's always been the formation of my thinking anyway. So, of course, this is how I fell into this battle, because previous to that, we didn't feel threatened. But I'm going to stop monopolizing the phone time.
Go back to the Cracker Jacks.
Thank you for correcting that and setting the record straight. Our number is 347-857-1380. We encourage our listeners not to be shy and call in to ask all the questions you've ever wanted to ask Robert and
especially jihadi.
We should play a game like Hi Bob. But instead of Hi Bob, we should play like Hi Chucky.
We'll start that very soon. I wanted to get to the next question, and we'll do that in the last 15 minutes. Because I've heard that you're also a great singer, Pamela, so we ask you to sing a song. A lot of readers requested it.
Yeah, I can't wait for her first album to come out.
Now,
oh, my God.
Robert,
we had another lifetime.
Let me ask you guys this. You guys are a great team. You work great together.
Can I ask you
how you found each other, and also perhaps to share with us the strengths that each of you think the other one has to help this very powerful machine for freedom work. Robert, why don't we start with you? Tell us how you guys joined forces and how you enjoy this work together with Pamela for freedom.
Well, it started actually, Jamie, with the honor killing of Aksa Parvez. And I saw that Pamela on Atlas Shrugs was noting something that I hadn't known, that she found out on her own, that was that Aksa was buried in an unmarked grave. Because, of course, what's not told and what's assumed to be false by the mainstream media is that the Muslims, even in the families of honor-killing victims, they approve of this. You know, the wife of Mohammed Parvez, who killed his daughter, she doesn't think that was a bad thing. She thinks that Aksa had it coming because she wouldn't wear hijab and she was becoming westernized and acting in ways that were not Muslim. And so they buried her in an unmarked grave because they were ashamed of her. They didn't think that it was a terrible thing that the father had killed the daughter. They thought good riddance. And so Pamela was pointing this out and was talking about taking up a collection to get this poor girl a headstone. And the headstone, of course, would, in the first place, honor her as a human being and stand up for the fact that Aksa Parvez was a human person with the same dignity and the same rights that every human person has, and that she shouldn't have been thrown away, she shouldn't have been murdered in this way, and that it was monstrous that this happened. And it would be a statement against honor killing at the same time, that we would remember this girl and we would say, we're not going to forget her. We're not going to act like this never happened. We're not going to act like she didn't exist or that she was something shameful, that she was a human being. And I thought this was a tremendous thing, that people have been talking about honor killing, people disapprove of honor killing, people write articles about it, they wring their hands about it, they bring the statistics, and all that stuff is good. But to push back and say, we're not going to let this stand, we're going to remember this girl. We're going to remember all of the girls who were murdered in honor killings. We're going to show that we're not going to let this stand in the West. I thought that was an amazing thing, and that there was nobody else who had the imagination or the courage or both to do anything like that. And so I told her, look, let me help out with that, and I'll put it up at Jihad Watch also, and we will get this girl a headstone. And that's really the first thing that we worked on together.
Excellent.
And I'm very proud of that. And we ultimately dedicated because it turned out that the cemetery was owned by the Islamic Society of North America, which is another Hamas-linked Muslim Brotherhood group. And so we couldn't get her a headstone there, and the family blocked it as well. And so we went to various other venues, various other sites in Canada, and in the United States, couldn't get anything. Nobody had the courage. Everybody cowers before these people.
Uh-huh.
And so, ultimately, Pamela was able to arrange for a memorial grove to be planted, a memorial grove of trees in Israel, in American Independence Park, outside Jerusalem, to be planted in honor of Aksa Parvez and all victims of honor killing. And so we went out, actually, to Israel in August, and dedicated that. And you can see the speeches that we gave to the group there in American Independence Park on that day. They're on YouTube. And anyway, that's how the collaboration started, and we continued after that with various other initiatives.
Yeah. And Pamela, and your take on how you guys work together and the power that you guys achieve from each other's strengths.
Well, you know, Robert Spencer has long been one of the world's leading scholars on Islam. When I came to the fight, he was foremost on the scene, and he was a leading author on this subject matter. And, of course, in doing the work, our paths would cross, of course, most notably with Chuck E. Cheese, of little green snot balls there. And anyway, we were of sound mind, even then. That was 2008. He did approach me on Aksa, and I respected him for it because I know that it was sort of out of the box, and he got it. He understood fundamentally that activism was the key to the battle, that this fight cannot be won. It cannot even get started if all you're going to do is just talk about it. And he understood that, and he wanted very much to be a part of it. And, he was so helpful. And the second event that we were involved in is when I had brought Herod Wilders to the States to speak at CPAC. And that was another one that became a wild and woolly ride. I never intend for it to be a wild and woolly, but everything always turns into that. In the case of CPAC, it's tragic because you have the largest gathering of conservatives in America, our people, 10,000 to 12,000 people, and it's controlled by the ACU, American Conservative Union Board, which is under the power of Grover Norquist, Muslim Brotherhood operative, and there is never anything on jihad. There is never anything on the war and so on and so forth. And so I had tried really at that time desperately to get him on the official schedule, and I came so close, so dangerously close. And then it was interesting because, David Horowitz was involved when, in fact, they had said yes, they were going to give David Keene, who's since gone, was going to give Herod Wilders a Courage Under Fire Award. And within 24 hours, they withdrew it because they said that David Horowitz and Robert Spencer had said things in Newsweek magazine against ACU. Really, they just mentioned Grover and Grover's nefarious influence, which is absolutely and positively true. And so they withdrew the award. And I was incensed, and so I took a room. I took a room to bring Wilders there, and if it wasn't for,
Pamela, sorry for interrupting. Just conclude briefly because we've got some callers in now. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I'm in the middle of a story. They're going to have to wait.
Go ahead.
What nerve wasting
but
my time.
But they're all lining up.
Me.
There's people that want to hear you sing. There's people that want to ask questions.
The point is, It was like $13,000, and Robert, again, helped me raise the money. And I realized going forward that it just couldn't be like, okay, Atlas Shrugs presents or Pamela Geller. We needed an organization because we were really doing big things. And when I decided to move forward with an organization, Robert and I created American Freedom Defense Initiative, and that was the you know, that was what made it official, and that's how, and everything came from there, the Ground Zero mosque protests, and so, but a large part of my work now is activism, and I think, you know, I'm going this weekend to BlogCon. Anyone who's in the Denver area, if you want to come down, I don't know where it's at, I don't even know where I'm going, just go Google BlogCon in Denver. If you're a blogger and you aren't far away, I think you should come.
Okay.
I'm not in the blog world. I'm not in that clique. I don't get linked and all that other stuff because of my subject matter. But I want people to know that you can really affect change through blogging. Everything I did, Atlas Shrugs was the mothership. The writing, the book, the articles. I know you want me to shut up, but I'm not going to shut up. The activism, the Ground Zero Mosque, all was from the blog. People should know that you can change the world, and this is a way to do it. Now I'll shut up.
Thank you very much, Pamela. We've got so many people calling in, and you can, I mean, we want to
listen
to you.
Oh, come on, you do not. Yeah, your mom's on the phone.
Well,
okay.
We've got, you know, a couple of my friends. Okay, first, before we continue to go, we just had calling in Stephen Brown, Front Page Magazine's contributing editor. Are you there, Steve?
Yes, I am, Jamie. It's been a very interesting show so far.
Thank you for being there, and Stephen is a great fan of Robert and Pamela. Before we continue, because we're going to be asking Steve a few questions, you wanted to give a big compliment to Robert and Pamela, Steve?
It's been a great. Thanks very much for showing up and helping Jamie out, and it's been very, very interesting listening to you two talk, and you're enlightening
like that,
a lot of
Robert
people about what's
Pamela?
Really going on.
Okay. Let's go to Mark from Atlanta, Georgia.
Uh-oh.
Maybe he's using sign language.
No, he's going to come on in a minute. Just take some
Mark.
Time. Mark, are you there?
I'm here. Can you guys hear me?
Mark,
it's Mark from Atlanta, Georgia. You're here to ask a question of Robert and Pamela.
Yes, yes. Actually, Jamie, I'm very glad to hear that you have these two illustrious freedom fighters on your show tonight. And I wanted to take the conversation in just a slightly different direction here, if I may. The article, you had published an article actually just today interviewing Paul Sperry on the subject of Grover Norquist and how he has been able to successfully infiltrate the Republican Party. And I'm interested to get both Robert and Pamela's perspective on this and how it is that he has operated without scrutiny for so long. And, I mean, Robert's written a whole book on this subject, Stealth Jihad. And yet it seems that, you know, with the exception of you and Robert and Pamela, no one is covering this story. And I'm just wondering what both Robert and Pamela, what their perspective is on that.
Money.
And please, let's be as brief as possible because we have to take callers, okay? Thank you.
I just have one word, money. Money. He's had big money. He's had big money
thing.
For a long time. He buys them when they're young. He buys these young budding politicians when they're young. And he sells them the stealth jihad, you know, tequila. And, you know, it's very hard to buck that system. But all we can do, and Robert, I'm sure, will have more to say about this, but we have to expose him. Because just we have to leap.
It's out of Americans for Tax Reform that they sign on to his anti-tax pledge, and he's the anti-tax king.
Yeah.
And then the people are clueless about Islam and jihad. They really are. The ignorance is still abysmal because there's so much misinformation and disinformation out there. And Grover tells them, oh, yeah, and I'm working with these wonderful moderate Muslims. And they help him out because they don't know. And they don't realize that the people that he's dealing with are Muslim Brotherhood operatives, people who are now in prison like Abdurrahman Alamoudi, and so many others. And somebody like Suhail Khan, who said all these fire-breathing jihad odd things at a Muslim meeting in the 90s, but now he's a respected conservative leader, and his father was a founder of the Muslim Students Association out of the Muslim Brotherhood, and Suhail has never shown any indication that he is not tied into that same network, quite the contrary. And they don't realize. They think, well,
okay,
these guys aren't terrorists, and they say they oppose Al-Qaeda, and so they must be good guys.
They need to be exposed.
You.
We need to leapfrog over the media. This is my only point. They need to be exposed. We have to go directly to the American people, just the way Reagan did. You have to go directly to the American people. The American people are good.
It's okay. Thank you. And, Mark, you want to stay on because you're a good friend of the center. You want to just stay on, or are you going to go or stay with us?
Sure. No, I can stay on.
Okay. Before we go forward, Steve, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Steve Brown, contributing editor of frontpagemag.com, an expert on the persecution of Christians in the Middle East and the rising persecution, especially during the quote-unquote Arab Spring. Can you talk about that for a minute before we go back to the callers? Because I think it's essential to bring this up and then get the input of everybody on it.
Well, I just wanted to mention to Robert first. Robert, I'm surprised you didn't bring up that incident in 2003. I wrote a column and interviewed you and Guy Millier about how your book was blocked from being published in France, and how the translator, writer Guy Millier was threatened with death, and the publisher.
I remember that very well, yes.
And this was like 8 years ago before the incident of the Charlie Hebdo magazine, so this should come to any person. This should come to you as no surprise after your own experience.
Oh, certainly, absolutely. Look, it's a double-edged sword. It's a double-headed attack. The peaceful groups, the nonviolent groups like CARE, Hamas-linked CARE, they try to shut down freedom of speech by smearing, demonizing, lying about, defaming freedom fighters and anybody who resists Islam and jihad. And at the same time, they have behind them these violent groups. So the cowards, like the guy at Amerimar Enterprises, the Hutton Hotel, they think, well, you know, I don't want to get blown up. I don't want to get the hotel blown up. And so I better do what these people want. And this has been going on for years. The stealth jihad has the violent jihad to back it up.
Okay.
And did you ever get your book?
Go ahead, Steve.
Oh, did you ever get your book published, Robert, over there in France?
No, it never did. Never got a French translation of any of my books.
Is that because the French are cowards?
Yeah, to a great degree. I mean, Guy Millier, I have to hand it to him, he tried. But after they shut him down, and it was the publisher, they said they weren't going to publish it because they had gotten threats. Then there were no more attempts by anyone.
Okay, we're going to go to Diane from Michigan. It just takes us 5 seconds here on our technical side. Diane from Michigan.
This is high-tech, Jamie. High-tech.
Diane.
You are really the leading talk show host, I think, in the country today.
Yeah.
You're certainly the leading talk show host on Blog Talk
Radio.
I think we got to come up with the big, you know, the three notes, Robert. We need to come up with the three notes. Blog Talk
Radio.
Radio.
This is, you guys are great guests while we have technical difficulties.
Love.
Well, we're
going
to go back to Diane in a second.
Okay.
We're
going
to go back.
Like
Steve,
talking to her. Wait 1 second. We're going to bring Diane now on. Can we have Diane from Michigan, please? Hello?
Hi, Diane.
Hello?
Hi.
Go ahead, Diane. You're with Pamela and Robert. Thank you for joining us.
Hello. This is Diane from Dearborn. Can you hear me?
I can.
Yes.
Oh, good. I just have a real quick question. Boy, I just admire you for everything you do, and I will be a regular listener to this. This is great. But I just have a quick question. Here in Dearborn, we have, I'm sure you know the area, we have many Muslims here, and many of them belong to the Anti-Arab Discrimination League. Do you know anything about this? Is this a...
Do you mean the American Arab... The American Arab Anti-Discrimination Committee, the
ABC? Yes.
That's just another Islamic supremacist group. I mean, it says that it's Arab, and there were Christian Arabs in it, But all the Christian Arabs were driven out of leadership positions and intimidated, sometimes physically. I have stories about ADC, Christian Arabs in the ADC in Texas and Louisiana, who were actually physically intimidated, physically threatened by the Muslims and told they had to resign from their positions in the ADC. The ADC it professes to be a secular group that's about race discrimination and about the problems that Arabs allegedly face in the United States, but actually it is tied in with the Islamic supremacist network 100%.
Yes, and it was founded by the notorious Jew hater James Zogby. Just a small incidental fact, but it's important.
And he's another Christian Arab useful idiot.
It's not affiliated with CARE or anything like that, though, is it?
No, it's a separate organization, but it runs on the same lines. It works for the same goals.
Well, thank you very much. That's very interesting. Thank you. I'm really enjoying
this.
And
I would strongly recommend, if you want more information, regarding these and other groups, front page, David Horowitz has a site called Discover the Networks.
I go into that, but
right.
I never saw this in there.
And there's always a very good there's a very good introduction to information you're looking for. Then, of course, if you're really looking for, the Harvard version, you go to Jihad Watch. But if you want an introduction to a particular, it's easy. You go into the search box, you put in the name. I think that, David Horowitz really never got the kudos that he deserved in developing that site. It's enormously important. I also think that it was the template for Media Matters and these sort of tangential groups like Loon Watch and Khan Web Watch. That's what they attempted to do, was set up a data bank to attack freedom fighters. Of course, theirs are full of lies and they're ad hominem attacks. They're ridiculous attacks. But Discover the Networks is the real thing. It's a very important website, but that's just for your information.
Yes, I visit that often, and yours too, Pamela, and yours, Robert, as well. I really enjoy all of your websites. Thank you very much.
Good luck there.
Thanks
good luck there in Dearborn.
Oh, yeah, I know.
And
I know what you're trying
ads,
to do here.
Just so that if my ads ever get up there, the Leaving Islam ads,
yes.
I'm involved in a lawsuit now for, how long am I suing them, Robert?
Again,
a year and a half?
I know, again.
I won.
I won, and they wouldn't put it up. The week they were supposed to put it up, they had all of the posters, they had everything, and they asked for a stay as if the judge was going to overrule her own ruling a week later. Oh, yes, I was wrong. Sorry, folks. But about that story that's so particularly monstrous is the week they were supposed to go up and they didn't go up, SMART wouldn't put them up, the Transit Authority wouldn't put them up, is Jessica Mogahed?
Mogahed, yes.
Yeah, was honor murdered that week in that town with that bus. Those buses were supposed to run. And you could say, well, you never know. You're right, you never know. She might have seen a bus. She might have made a call. She might have gotten to a safe house. There's no way of knowing. That's how critical this issue is. And that's how...
Oh, yes.
Yeah. That's how absolutely horrific it was that they didn't run those ads.
Definitely.
But those ads are going to go up. I just want you to know I will not drop the ball on that. There's just no way it's going to happen. And you're going to be my point man there to get me pictures of my ads on the bus.
Okay, thank you very much, Diane.
I will. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you, and call
Bye-bye.
In next week again. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Diane.
Steve, I want to get back to you for a minute. Can you tell us the situation very briefly of what you're studying in terms of the rising persecution of Christians in the Middle East?
Very bleak. Very, very bleak in Egypt. We should be ready in the West to receive 5 to 8 million Christian refugees from Egypt. It's really getting bad. The Egyptian army is now throwing its lot in with the Muslim Brotherhood. It announced it is going to investigate 38 Christians for the riots in front of the Mesbro, from the Mesbro media and the Mesbro media area, in which several dozen Christians were killed. It's like investigating the victim. I think they made a deal with the devil. They made a deal with the Muslim Brotherhood. If you will see, in these countries, third world countries, the army is a separate entity. They have their own hospitals, their own businesses, their own universities and schools. I think the army said, if you don't touch us and you don't, you let us allow, just allow things to go on the way they are, we'll back you in the Islamization of Egypt. They've thrown the Christians under the bus. I've talked to Egyptians and they told me on the street the word is they're going to go to town on the Christians very soon.
Thank you, Steve. Mark, are you there?
Yes,
Mark?
I'm still here. Yes.
Mark's a great friend of the center. Mark, I know that this is an issue close to your heart. Before we get back to Robert and Pamela, what do you think explains the silence of our media and in our culture of the persecution of Christians in the Middle East and how it's rising there at this time?
Well, you know, if you look at the general coverage in the mainstream media of this whole so-called Arab Spring, what a joke that is, there have been, you know, with the exception of a few stories on Fox News, they've been pretty universally positive about the developments there. And I think it's just not, I mean, for lack of a better word, I mean, it's just not politically correct to overlook persecution of you know, Christians and Jews, but you know, constantly, you know, cheerlead for these supposed freedom fighters that are in league with the Muslim Brotherhood. I mean, I don't really quite understand it, other than that the media is largely leftist.
Thank you, Mark. I think that the problem here is it is the same forces that control the boundaries of our culture's debate, the same forces that are controlling the media, are the people that are persecuting people like Pamela and Robert. Pamela and Robert, in terms of what has been said, can you frame your thoughts also in terms of the Arab Spring? And it seems like there's a lot of forces in the West, and especially among the left, they're trying to cheer this thing on as if it's some kind of democracy movement, when in fact it's paving the road to Sharia and all those in many of those countries. Is that right?
Absolutely.
You want to speak, Robert?
It was the Muslim Brotherhood all along, Jamie. It was the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt and in Tunisia, to some degree also in Yemen, Al-Qaeda in Libya. And the mainstream media continuously has ignored that, continues to do so. And yet it becomes clearer and clearer, such as the New York Times did a couple weeks ago, and now increasingly in the media you see people just matter-of-factly writing about the Islamic takeover of these countries and the imminent imposition of Islamic law. And yet nobody ever stops and says, well, we were wrong. We got this all wrong. It wasn't about democracy and human rights at all. It was about Islamic supremacist takeover. And Spencer was right, and Geller was right. The fact is that they just turn on a dime and pretend that this is what they've been saying all along. But it isn't. And now we're going to see Islamic states all across North Africa and into the Middle East probably attempt to reestablish the caliphate, and none of this is going to be good for the U.S. or for Israel.
So wait a minute. So Pamela, if I think that the both of you believe, let me not put words in your mouth, that nation building is quicksand and that it's a mistake in that part of the world. What do we do to confront this problem? What can
okay,
the West
I just could, all right, just assumptions that I don't agree with. I have to go back a bit. It's not that it's random. It's not accidental that the only real Arab Spring. The only Arab Spring, and there was, in June, July, August, September of 2009, was in Iran, when you had, just even if you're not a rocket scientist, even if you don't study you're not a geopolitical strategist or what have you, just the crowd, just the millions that took to the street in Iran, women and children and Zoroastrians and Persians and Muslims and hijab and no hijab and lipstick and eyeliner. It was a women's revolution. They were holding signs saying, Obama, you are either with us or against us. They were holding signs. The students were. We're sorry for 79. That was a defining moment in history. That was a historical crossroads. Iran is the head of the snake. Iran is Hezbollah in Lebanon. Iran is, Syria is a proxy of a vassal state of Iran. They have partnered with the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt. They are the ones agitating with the Shia in Bahrain. They have secretly been, and I know I've been blogging on it for years, aiding and abetting the Taliban. Repeatedly we see this, and yet Obama was busy ignoring it. I know that I was the only one covering it extensively on a daily basis, along with the Huffington Post. The media completely ignored it. It's as if it didn't happen. Netta Sultan, this beautiful girl, I mean, if she wasn't the icon of the movement being slaughtered like that in the street, the people being mowed down, raped to death, men and women, and he does nothing. And yet our ally for 30 years, the only Muslim country that made a peace with Israel, he throws it away with both hands in 5 minutes. That was not accidental. The Muslim Brotherhood had been banned by Mubarak, was invited to Obama's speech on June 4th, 2009. So he had been, and by the way, had low-level contacts in the Obama administration, had been communicating with the Muslim Brotherhood.
Okay, thanks.
My point in this is that it's not like there's a blanket, like, oh, Arab Spring, it's all okay. No, it was not supported when it really meant something, but it was in Egypt. And why Libya? First of all, we have absolutely no national interest in Libya, none whatsoever. Yes, the French get oil, but so who cares about the French?
Pamela, I want to get to Libya for a minute. Just a sec. There's a lot of chat questions coming in. There's one chat question from Nawid from Toronto, Ontario, Canada. He asks, Robert and Pamela, do you have any plans to come speak publicly in Canada? Our Prime Minister rightfully stated recently that Islamic terrorism is the biggest threat to Canada. Can we get some comments from you two on that? Robert,
now,
go ahead.
Oh yeah. Now, Weed, when you get us an invitation to get up there from an organization, we're coming.
I was just going to say that. If he wants us to come, then have him set it up. We would be glad to go anywhere, but we have to have somebody who makes it happen on the ground
and
there.
And it's always individuals. I mean,
now, I'm afraid that we're running out of time.
We
and
are.
You won't believe how many readers and listeners have written in to me in the last hour begging for Pamela to sing. Apparently, we've only got a couple of minutes left. Or Robert, I know you guys do a little bit of entertainment as well. Pamela, can you sing us at least a couple seconds some kind of song? You apparently have a reputation for being a beautiful singer.
In time the Rockies may crumble, Gibraltar may tumble, they're only made of clay, but our love is here to stay. Okay,
excellent.
That's it.
I
hope there's no podcast of this. Please.
Okay, and Robert, people are also listeners and viewers. Well, singing or to tell some kind of a political joke because you're known for your sense of humor.
A political joke because I'm known for my sense of
humor. Oh, Robert, get out the sax.
I'm not home. I'm in a
Aww.
Hotel room, or I would play you the sax. But a little boy, and you've probably gotten this one in your email 20 times.
Keep this
but
appropriate,
anyway.
Please. Okay, go
yes,
ahead.
I'll keep it appropriate. You already know. The little boy, the little Muslim boy, and he loses his mother in the supermarket, so he goes to the manager or whatever, and the guy says, well, what does your mother look like? And he says, I have no idea.
Mark and Steve, how do you mark and rate Pamela's singing and Robert's joke?
Well, you know, I'd hire her for a Muslim wedding for sure. I'd hire her as a belly dancer and a singer. I think she'd just be fantastic.
I think that you really want to say, I think she should stay in the counter-jihad business.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, we have a couple minutes left. To get back on a serious note for a minute, you know, the domestic political scene. Robert, what's happening here to Herman Cain? Is this leftist assassination racist tactics here? What's going on? There's a lot of double standards here. They're not interested
in
sexual harassment when it comes to Clinton, and all of a sudden when it comes to Herman Cain, they're all out with moral indignation. How do you read it?
Well, obviously they're trying to destroy him because he threatens them, and he threatens the whole power establishment. And so he is, and it's a measure of the magnitude of the threat that he presents that they are trying to do this to him, and their hypocrisy is evident. I hope it's evident to the American people. I would like to be able to say that I support Herman Cain, and certainly I'm open to doing so. He said some very good things about resisting stealth jihad and the Islamization of America, and then at the same time, he seems to be a little bit confused because he met with representatives of the Muslim Brotherhood in America, the Islamic Society of North America, and they played the victimhood game, and he immediately backed down and apologized. And so, you know, I don't know which Herman Cain is going to show up tomorrow. If the anti-jihad Herman Cain shows up, then he's certainly got my support.
Well, wait a minute. Then your answer is based on some optimism that Herman Cain will survive this witch hunt at the moment. Do you think he'll survive it?
I kind of think so, because I think that the American people are onto the game now.
Okay, Pamela, what do you make of this assault on Cain right now? How do you read it?
Well, it's obvious. They want to destroy him. There's no question about it. Imagine if he ran up against Obama. They couldn't play the race card. He's a genuine article. He's descended from slaves. Obama's descended from a Kenyan. He came up the hard way, the real way, the American way, by grit and smart and wits. Obama came up the parasitical way as a community organizer. They don't want to go up against this man. This is obviously a campaign to destroy him. I mean, look, anybody over 30 remembers, Bill Clinton dropping his pants, pulling out his pecker, and telling Paula Jones to kiss it. We suffered through the rape of Juanita Broderick and the sexual attack of Kathleen Wiley. We suffered through John Edwards. First, of course, that video where he's so pretty, brushing his hair, and then the next thing we know, he's having a torrid affair when his wife is dying of cancer. And the only reason why it comes out is because somebody in the hospital, snaps a pic of him, cuckooing with the baby. It was out there. The Inquirer had it a year prior, but now CNN has literally become Cain sexual harassment channel. This is all innuendo. I had no idea, Jamie, that all those years I worked at the Daily News and the New York Observer, that I was sexually harassed every day. I didn't know it.
Pamela, do you think that Cain will survive this onslaught?
Absolutely.
Steve, your perspective on the Herman Cain narrative?
Well, it's just like Pam was saying, it's just a sheer hypocrisy of it. Like, after Bill Clinton and John Edwards, and even going back to Lyndon Johnson and JFK, the big hero of the liberal left, there's a sheer hypocrisy. It just overwhelms me, and I think people just see this,
Yeah, nude babes swimming in the White House pool.
And
so that would be a great song.
Mark from Atlanta, how do you read it?
Well, it's interesting because I have followed Herman's career since at least 2004, living here in Atlanta when he ran for Senate. This is a measure. I mean, what Robert and Pamela are saying is exactly correct. This is a measure of just how frightening this guy is to the establishment in both parties. It's not just the Democrats and the leftists. You've got a lot of establishment Republicans,
yep,
who absolutely do not want to see him become the nominee. And, it's obvious. I mean, if you look at none of these allegations.
It's Cain derangement syndrome.
Hanging Herman. Isn't it convenient that all these allegations have come out just as Herman was surging in the polls? Nothing was said about this. I heard nothing of this all the way back to 2004. And now all of a sudden these women are coming out of the woodwork. I mean, it really is absurd.
Okay, we only have 3 minutes left, so I'm begging each of you, especially Pamela, because when you tell me they're shush, I always back down. But please try to be brief in the next couple answers, because I want to ask a few things. Pamela, I'm going to go with you first, because we have 2 minutes left. Tell us some of your short-term plans. What are you up to in terms of the fight?
Fight!
Well, you don't have to be that brief. Tell us, are you working on a new book? Do you have some new speeches coming up? What are you up to?
Well, of course, I'll be in Denver, and then next week I'll be speaking in Arizona. We're now planning our next CPAC event, which is a blockbuster. There's new leadership at CPAC under Cardenas. Al Cardenas, I may be saying his name wrong. They've not gotten back to me, which makes me worried that perhaps when they threw out David Keene, who was merely a puppet, and the wonderful Lisa De Pasquale, that the people that they brought in are even more Grover Norquistian, because he's still there. He's still on the board, despite the big brouhaha. So we have the ads. I'm suing MTA because the anti-Israel ads that ran in the subway to stop USA to Israel did run, and I ran my ads. I submitted my ads, which were, in any war between the civilized man and the savage, you side with the civilized man, support Israel, defeat jihad. They were rejected, and I have taken the MTA to court. Tell it to the judge. Tell it to the judge. Order it.
Pamela. Are you pessimistic or optimistic? Brief answer, please. Pessimistic or optimistic about the upcoming struggle, the threats we face, and what's probably going to happen in the 2012 election with Obama? What do you think? Are you optimistic or pessimistic?
As long as there stands one free man, I'm optimistic. My only concern is at what cost. I know that we will win at what cost. I know we will defeat evil at what cost. We could have stopped Hitler at Czechoslovakia. We could have stopped Ahmadinejad during the revolution. We could have stopped Obama.
Thank you. And are you happy that Robert Spencer is with us in this battle?
Oh, Robert is the bomb. No, I take it
excellent.
Back. He's the Moab. He's the mother.
Okay, excellent.
He is the mother of all bombs.
Okay, Robert, 20 seconds, please. Your plans with fighting this war, you're on the front lines. What are you up to?
I'm going to Australia. I'm going to do 2 or 3 weeks in Australia at the end of November, beginning of December, going all around the country, speaking. First time I've been there. And I have a new book coming out in the spring called Did Muhammad Exist? An Inquiry into Islam's Obscure Origins, which I think is going to surprise quite a few people.
Woohoo!
Excellent, excellent. Steve, a very brief comment from you before we go.
I'm helping you get out tomorrow's edition, Jamie.
Okay, excellent.
From Page Mag. That's my big plan.
And Mark, can we leave on an optimistic note with you? Okay, well, I think Mark left us. I'm going to say goodbye. Pamela, can you do a little bit of singing while I say goodbye? Because it'll help the show, okay?
Sure.
Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening to the Jamie Glassoff Show. Join us next week, Tuesday, at 8 o'clock Pacific time. Thank you. And Robert and Pamela, thank you. And now, Pamela, you sing a little bit.
The Show.
Yeah, you guys sing a little bit.
Roll out the barrel. We'll have a barrel of fun. Roll out. Can I go now?
Okay, thank you very much. We'll see you next week.
All right.
Thank you, Robert and Pamela.